It's funny you say control, because I ask, like when I'm doing the coaching, I ask parents this often. I ask them, I say, who do you think has more control? The child, the, you know, the teenager, or the parent? And most of the time, the parents think that they have control. And the fact of the matter, they don't have the most control. The teenager actually has the most control. And the reason why they have the most control is because the parents care more about the relationship. So a teenager, you know, is so focused on other things. And I say it all the time. If a parent becomes too controlling, the teenager will just completely shut down, distance themselves. Now you don't have a relationship with your child. And I always tell parents, like, you have to play the long game. You know, you know, as a teenager, remember, this child hopefully one day will be 40 with children and a family. Like, try to create the relationship knowing that they're going to be 40 and you want to maintain this relationship. Don't treat them like they're less than and that they can't be open to you. So it's so funny you bring up the idea of control.
And if you want to be a part of the conversation too, then subscribe to my Patreon, www.patreon.com/Mr. Chaz, and join the conversation. Ask your own questions. Be a part of it for as low as $5 a month and get access to one-on-one coaching with me for as low as $20 a month.
What's my name? What's my name? What's my name?
Welcome to Mr. Chaz's Parenting and Teaching Podcast, where I introduce you to the people that can help you on your parenting, leadership, or teaching journey. And today, for this episode, Dr. RJ. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you about him. I'm going to let him tell you about him, and then we're gonna have a really great conversation and dive deep into parenting teens. So RJ, why don't you tell us who you are?
Hey guys, how's it going? I'm Dr. RJ, as Mr. Chaz said. You know, I have an unorthodox path to get to where I am today. My background is actually in orthodontics. So I am an orthodontist, but along the way I transitioned to solely focusing on coaching teenagers and their parents. So I'm happy to chat with you guys today and see what we can discover.
Let me discover, what was the shift? What inspired you to make that shift?
You know, I always tell doctors, because I actually help doctors become coaches, because whenever you're 17 and 16, you're making a decision that your 30-year-old self, 40-year-old self may not agree with, right? So it's like when I was 17-year-old, all I had a heart was to like help people. That's all I knew. I wanted to help people. And as a teenager, I remember being lost. I have a great dad, but he wasn't really available and I didn't have anyone to talk to. And I remember that weighing on me, and my teacher, you know, had me talk with a guidance counselor, and she said, hey, what do you want to do for the rest of your life? And I'm like, I don't know. I just want to make people happy. You know, I'm a happy, positive person, and I just want to make people happy. And she told me, you have two options. You could be a comedian or you could be an orthodontist. So I'm not funny. So I'm like, okay, I'm going the orthodontics route. And that's exactly what I did. I stayed the course, became an orthodontist, and I opened my own practice here in Austin with the mindset that I would be able to impact teenagers. And like literally the first year of opening, I put braces on this one child, and the next day the parents was like, hey, we got to get the braces off. And I'm like, I hope I didn't mess up. Like, what happened? And what came out was that she had an eating disorder. She had body image issues, and the therapist wanted them off. So, you know, I followed up with the parent about 6 months. They're like, hey, nothing is working. And they stuck with it for another 9 months. It's like, hey, you know what? This is not working. I do know that you mentor teenagers. Can you just talk to my daughter? And I was like, you know, at that time I was mentoring so many teenagers, and I was teaching at my church, more of the teenage ministry. So I was like, sure, I'll talk to her. And I'm telling you, literally the first conversation, probably like 5 minutes in my head, I'm thinking like, I understand why therapy's not working. She needs a life coach. And I shared this with mom. We looked all over the United States. There were zero at the time, and this was almost a decade ago, of life coaches working with teenagers specifically. So at that moment, I felt called to do it, and I went through certification program and all that, and then confirmed that I was on the right path. 1 month of coaching her completely transformed. No longer suffering from the body image issue, and she got her braces on, everything. It was a happy story. So,
So what was in that specific story, like, what do you think was the shift? Like, what did you say? Because I'm sure people are curious, because you just had this life-changing interaction with this child, and any parent out there who is fearful of that happening in the future, or is going through that right now, or went through it in the past, love to know, like, what was, maybe, I don't know, what did you help her with? What did you say? What did you do to kind of make that life-changing, you know, decision moment for her?
Yeah, I think, you know, coaching is a process. So I'm not sure if there was like one thing, but if I had to point to one area that I believe really turned the light bulb on for her, was the fact that life happens in our mind. Like, once she kind of understood that concept, everything changed, because we can't control what life brings us, but we can absolutely control our experience, the meaning we give things, and that can absolutely change everything. So once she started to say, wait, if I can start to work on my beliefs, and I can start to work on the meanings and the stories I give certain situations, I can actually change my life experience. Yeah. And she can do that, and it was awesome.
Yeah, that's that. I agree with that. That is so true. And I think, you know, a big challenge is, now, that's not something I learned until my older age, right? Like, definitely not in my teenage years did I have that amount of self-awareness. I think maybe nowadays teens have access to more information, and so that kind of self-awareness is more possible or more accessible. But at the same time, all of the negative messages are more accessible too. So I guess, you know, my next question would be is, how do we kind of help children, teens, with that mindset shift? Because I know it didn't come till later, that was an inside job, you know, that was something I can't say that, you know, I went looking for that kind of information. I went looking for trying to like change things and wanting to grow. And that's when, you know, you stumbled onto the beliefs and all that stuff, right? That helped me even till this day, right? And have helped me to get to the point where I'm at today and to be in a place where I feel emotionally healthy. But how do we do that with teens?
Yeah, you know, and it's funny you say, because that's the reason I'm so passionate about this mission, because as you said, and the same thing with me, we learned this so much later. Imagine if we knew this as a teenager, like, you know, so I'm super excited to let these teens like really discover this information so early, because I'm telling you, they're going to do so many great things in life, because we all know, you know, when we think of success in general, it's an emotional process. That's what holds us back from getting what we want, is the emotion aspect. Not because we don't know the strategy. The strategy only makes about 20%. So to really have this emotional, you know, management process under control, I mean, you can do so much in life. But to answer your question, like, what do we do with teenagers? Honestly, we have to fight. We have to make the fight, because you're absolutely right. They're constantly, they're inundated by negative messages. And it's not even just negative messages from other people. It's the ones they tell themselves. So if all their, you know, if majority of their day is looking at other people and saying, I'm not good enough, I'm not pretty enough, and, you know, seeing all the negativity in the media and seeing all this, you know, their friends scoring higher grades than they are, it really just weighs down on them, and it creates this life experience that they're just not enough. So the more we can kind of pour into the teenagers and say, wait a minute, those are thoughts in your head. Those are beliefs, and that you can change. So we give them the tools to change a belief. We give them tools to overcome certain thoughts. You know, it's funny, as a life coach, I always compare myself to a sports coach, because that's how I really feel. It's like I see these teenagers as the star player. And this is completely different than therapy. And I'm not knocking on therapy, but I am saying that when you go see a therapist, you are a patient. You are, you know, you have a problem. Whenever teenagers come with life coaching, you know, we see them as a star player with so much potential. So my job is to train them and then call plays. And that's really what I do on a weekly basis. Like, oh, this is the obstacle. Oh, run this play. you know, and that's how they over, they're able to overcome it and actually see life more in a, in, as a game, in the sense of like, oh, I'm just overcoming these thoughts and these belief patterns to get what I want.
Mm. So what I'm hearing is that you give them the tools in these sessions, you give them tools. And I imagine that's probably a bulk of the beginning of getting to know them, connecting with them, creating a feeling of safety, giving them the tools, because I imagine if you don't have that relationship and connection and that sense of safety, that they're not even going to be open to hearing about your tools, right? So you give them the tools, and then when, you know, there are other problems, they again feel safe enough to tell you about their problems and share what's going on and these kind of like limiting beliefs and these thoughts that they're having. And then you're able to kind of help them reach into their tool bucket, their backpack of skills, and then use them and, you know, different, you know, with different obstacles that come, that will challenge them and that, you know, come up. Is that about right, what you're saying?
I would say that also we have a different strategy. So yes, it's exactly what you just laid out is exactly what happens, but we do it in a different format. And I actually had to discover this early on, because at the beginning, I would coach one-on-one. You know, you talk to me, tell me your problems. And then, you know, what really changed my mind on that is the child would feel better. And then, you know, next week we're dealing with the same thing. And then we're doing the same thing. And then I remember the parent was like, hey, what is the difference between you and a therapist? And that really like opened my mind. It's like, wait a minute, I need a different structure. So I completely changed. This was many years ago, and it was the best decision I ever made, because our success rate is like, you know, almost 99%. And we completely changed the whole format. So now what we don't do one-on-one. I mean, yeah, you can get one-on-one coaching because we do have a platform set up, because we do know certain situations happen. I just lost my best friend. Okay, yes, you need a one-on-one coach to kind of help you get over that. But the general format is actually trainings. So we train them first. We train them on how to understand their thoughts, their emotions, how to understand their beliefs, their value system. So they learn all of these things that I think they should be learning in school anyway, but we train them on that first. And then in a group setting, then I'm given plays, because the cool thing about this is no one has to tell me their deepest, darkest secret, right? Because we all have obstacles. They see other teenagers, their age, maybe some they look at as popular. And it's like, wait a minute, that guy is struggling with this. I'm struggling with this too. And it's just an immediate buy-in. And then there's so many studies to show that performance increases with group settings. So we have so much success with that. But that's not even all. I have a secret sauce. You know, I always tell, this is my secret. You know, I'm sharing it with Mrs. Chaz. Not everyone knows this. But really the secret sauce of it all are the parents. Oh, man. When I discovered that the parents are the key, like it was game over. Because I remember when we started this group, it's like, oh man, we would get so many success stories. But then it's like, they'll regress and they regress. I'm like, what's happening? And then they all blame their parents. So I'm like, let me just talk to the parents. And sure enough, I saw it right away. I'm like, oh yes, we need to make a shift with the way you're communicating, or the way you're choosing certain things with parents. So now to be in my program, parents must go through coaching, and the teen goes through the coaching. So it's not just teens anymore. Like the parents must go through a coaching program in order for their teen to go through it. And we have amazing success with that.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. What you said about the community, what you said about the parents, you know, one with the community, like that is through connection and through other people. You know, I mean, you think about like, you know, AA, like it has to be a community experience. You have to hear the stories from other people. Like that is so healing, and that helps us so much, which, you know, anyone who follows me on Instagram and follows my stories know that I use that a lot too. I'm just kind of just stopped from just now from having a whole conversation where people are sharing, you know, different perspectives. And I get messages constantly that say like, oh my goodness, this person put what I was feeling into words. Like they said what I felt better than I could say, right? That was so healing. And so I so agree with that. And then the parents being a part of that, I mean, you could teach them all the skills and like they can be internally, you know, have healthy habits, but then they go home in 8 hours of the day or night, they're having these like kind of unhealthy things happening. And that's, it makes sense that there's not consistency there. And especially they're trying to use the tools, but the parents aren't, you know, into it. You're just talking back and you're just being defiant, you know, kind of thing. That makes a lot of sense. But, you know, I think there's a piece missing here. And you mentioned it, the school, right? You think that this should be taught in schools, right? Like, I don't know, why aren't you, Dr. RJ, and obviously you can't be, but why isn't there a Dr. RJ mandatory class every high school? Like, why aren't these things, why isn't this as important as math and the sciences, right?
It's a wonderful question. And I will say, I am trying to. In fact, you know, we're working with the school in Massachusetts to try to develop a pilot program. But I would say the hurdles that we have to overcome with this is, you know, budget. So that's one issue, because unfortunately, I would love to do this for free. But, you know, there's investment associated with this kind of work. So we have budget as an issue, but also, you know, what most people think success comes from. So most people think success comes from like the tools or the strategy, but they don't really, most people do not realize that success is 80% mental. So the better we are at helping and equipping these teenagers with managing their thoughts and their emotions, they're actually going to perform better in sports and school and everything, even behave better. And I think, you know, we're still under the same kind of mindset of like, oh no, come through this factory or this process, and the A's, you're the bright students. The C's, you're the bad students. You're going to be failures in life. And we still have that even to this day. And it's unfortunate, because I think that's why, you know, especially here in Texas, so many people are turning towards homeschooling, because they see the process. And then from my own kind of opinion, and the reason why I'm homeschooling my boys is for a few reasons, but also I do believe that in today's age, these schools are training people up to be workers. You know, you have a child coming in, super active, super, you know, jovial. Oh no, you have to calm down and sit straight, raise your hand, be quiet, you know, go through this process. And it's training us to be workers. You know, I'm an entrepreneurial spirit, you are, and I want my children to be, and I don't want them to be trained to be a worker. No, you can make, there's so much in you to impact this world. And, you know, I saw this quote the other day that, you know, a paycheck is like, you know, is paying you off or paying your dreams off, essentially. Like, you're throwing away your dreams for this paycheck. No, I want my children to go out and go pursue their dreams and have that freedom. So yeah, I see so much wrong with the school system, but we're trying. You know, I'm trying to start to get, you know, life coaches in. My goal is to have every single child equipped with a life coach. That is my goal. That's my mission. And I feel very confident I'm going to be successful.
Love that. It really shouldn't be on you to try to provide a free service. It really should be on the massive budget we have in this country to allocate some of that towards education so we can make room for that.
You can't separate education and mental health. I mean, it's like, oh, here's our education budget. Oh, mental health. No, that's part of education. You know, this is part of it.
Yeah. And that's where we mess up. Like, that's what people don't understand. And people we mess up the most, because we think that, you know, we prioritize like the math, the English, the science, and think that, you know, that you have to. The only option, and I think it's like almost a conversation about like the options that we are presenting for children. And we're saying, and I don't necessarily think that it's bad to be a worker bee, and that is, you know, for some people that is super fulfilling for them. You know, I fully believe that being a janitor or a fast food worker can be really fulfilling and be the right job for many people. But the problem is that what we tell children is that you have really two options. Either you're the fast food worker, and that's everyone who gets C's and below, or you are a CEO of a huge corporation, and those are the only two options, and those are the A students, right? And what happens is the A students, and I wonder how, you know, because I know this pressure comes up a lot in the teen years of the pressure to keep up being that A student, right? To be the perfect. And when we make a mistake or we get the A minus or the B minus, like people really break down. And part of this, because we don't, especially in today's world, you know, you are proof, I'm proof that there are so many more options, right? Even in education, right? And I'm in the education field. I would say you're in the education field as well. Traditionally a field where you can't make, you know, you say you can't make love. You're going into education, you're not going to make any money. So give that up. Like, you might feel fulfilled, but be ready to be, you know, broke and burnt out, right? And, you know, I don't think that that has to be the reality. And I think that's less and less the reality as time goes on. And so I think we need to be clear in one, reorganizing the way we're doing education and the whole, everything that we're doing, communicating children about what their options are in life. And is that one grade in Mrs. Allison's eighth grade class really, really like the deal breaker? Is it worth you rupturing your relationship, right? Because they got a C or B, right? And I'm kind of going off on a tangent, but this is what I feel really passionate about.
And honestly, it's not just from the pressure is not just from school, it's from the parents. And, you know, coaching these teenagers, I'm working with parents. And, you know, I have to help them kind of organize their thoughts as it relates to their child. Like, so many parents want the best for their child, naturally. And they understand, hey, the more A's you make, the better school you get in, the more opportunities. But the fact of the matter is the parents put so much pressure on it. And I'm going to tell you exactly how teenagers translate that. And this is something that's eye-opening to parents. Because, you know, and this is my job as the coach for the parents. I'm not going to tell you how to parent. All I can share with you is I've been coaching teenagers for almost a decade. I've coached over 5,000 teenagers. I have a good sample size of information about what they're thinking and what they're feeling like. Not to mention, I have a TikTok channel, 600,000 followers. And, you know, like, I have all this wealth of information where teenagers are comfortable speaking their thoughts about their parents. And one thing that comes up when parents are overly focused on grades is that that's all you care about. Like, in other words, I'm nothing more than how well I do in school. You know, you don't care that, you know, I'm actually a pretty funny person. You know, I enjoy video games or I enjoy skateboarding. All you see is me is for a grade. And it actually creates a disconnect. So these are the blind spots that I help parents with in my coaching program.
And, you know, I would even the aunts, the uncles, the family members who during it's holiday season right now, what's the first thing that we ask kids? How are you doing in school? How are your grades? Right. Nothing about like, what are your interests? What are you into? Like, nothing about the actual person. We just like, what's your number? Give me your number. Yeah. So I can have a reaction and judge you and you see the looks, because I'm a former not such a great student. I'm a former C, D, B, a bunch of grade student. And I see, you know, like, I know exactly what the question is. Like, I don't even want to tell you because I know exactly what's going to come after it. Judgment and like, you should do better. And like, okay, I heard it. Like, that doesn't help at all. And then the conversation's over. Right. And so it's not even, you know, I don't think it's even just from the parents, where I do think that I think it's adults in general, but parents are the main ones in a child's life who are going to be giving that message. Right.
And you know, I have a 4 and a 2-year-old. So it's interesting at this age how much they dream. Their imagination is so amazing. My child would be, you know, truly landscaping the entire yard with like a stick. And their imagination is so wild. And we know this with teenagers or children, is that they dream big. And then somewhere along the lines, we give them options. Oh, you're going to be a nurse, a doctor, a lawyer, a CEO. And that's it. I'm like, no, the world, I mean, you create anything you want. And it seems like this is natural with children. But along the way, we just chip away and say, nope, you actually got to follow in line and choose from these few options.
Yeah. And I'd say, you say chip away. I think we chip away at the person that teenager is, like their being, their soul, like, and we say for, and we trade it in, we chip those pieces away and we trade it in for things like compliance and higher grades. And instead, we can value things like connection and collaboration and helping them look inward to see like what they really want. I remember, because clearly I'm a talker, as you know, this got the whole podcast, and I've been talking for half this conversation, and you're the guest. And someone, you know, I was always told that, like, oh, since you talk back, you should be a lawyer. You should be a lawyer. And so I literally, for a good portion of my school career, probably up until high school, I was like, okay, like, I'm gonna be a lawyer. Like, that's what I'm gonna be, because that's what the adults told me, right? And I didn't see any other for like teachers. It's a different lesson, but it's a big lesson. I took a law class and we had to actually do a mock trial. So I actually had to do the work of a lawyer. And I did it. And I actually, you know, like, I did the whole thing and I was into it and did. To do in my life. And so I'm like, oh, I actually don't want to be a lawyer. So, you know, I say that, and that's really important. The lesson there is that we need to be giving children these opportunities instead of just saying, you're going to be this, you're going to be this. Give them the opportunity to try and experience these things and to actually get their hands in it in some way that they can. Obviously, as a high schooler, I'm not going to, you know, I'm not actually going to do trial law, but we can do a mock trial. There's lots of things that we can do to give children the experience so that they can find out for themselves what they want to do. But first, we have to give the experience, as opposed to what we traditionally do in school for most classes, is sit and talk about the thing, right?
Absolutely. And it's funny you say that, because that was exactly my path. You know, I was a talker too. You know, I have a podcast, so it makes sense. And they're like, oh, you should be a lawyer. So I did debate all throughout high school. And then I shadowed a lawyer. And, you know, and whenever he, you know, what changed it for me is when he said, hey, I'm going to give you some sound advice. Don't be a lawyer. You know, okay, you know, if you're saying this. And in my, at the time, my one of my closest friends, he wanted to be a dentist. So now I'm going to go shadow the dentist. And this guy was so happy. He was working 4 days a week. And he's like, be a dentist. So then I kind of went that route.
Why did he tell you not to be a lawyer? Was it because he was miserable and he was like,
this it had to be? Because remember, I was on this path of like, I just want to be happy. You know, I want to be happy. I want other people to be happy. And he's like, oh, if you're looking for happiness, don't be a lawyer, you know?
Yeah, see, yeah, and I for teens, and I only found. And that's not even the end of my story, but we're going to shift. And it took me a lot longer to find, you know, where I really fit in and where my passion was. And even when I was doing the thing in education, because of the messages I was getting from what you're supposed to do as a male, right? Not working in education, not working with children. It still took me, I was there. I was in it. I was loving it. I was enjoying it was hard work, but I loved every day of it. You know, overall, you know, there's definitely parts I did love, but it still took me so long to realize that, like, this is where I belonged, and this is where, and if I didn't, I wouldn't have been able to impact the thousands of people I've been able to impact, right? And I have a fairly decent following as well, and I get messages, and, you know, like, you ever think about, like, you know, if, and I don't know, maybe it sounds like a little bit of your story too, but sometimes I think about, like, I would have just listened to the adults and didn't trust myself and didn't, like, look inward and to figure out what was right for me, I wouldn't have been able to help so many people. Like, I get messages every day to say that, like, you know, the content and my work and coaching has been life-changing for them and the relationships that they have with their families. And
That's awesome.
It's just really powerful to me.
And you know what? I think you mentioned something there that I think is super, super important. And, you know, there's this thing that's called the journey. You know, you don't have to have it all figured out. A 17-year-old do not need to know what they're going to do for the next 40 years. It's okay to just enjoy the journey. You go through experiences. Like, even me, I don't look at orthodontics as a mistake. it was a journey. It was a part of my story. And I learned so much from it. I had so many different experiences. So when I think whenever teenagers start to look at life as a journey, then it's not so much pressure on like, oh, did I make the right decision? Like, should I be doing this or should I be doing that? So I think that's great that you actually, you know, you're the perfect person to show that a journey is everything. You know, you're able to have much more impact. And guess what? You're still on a journey and you're just getting started as far as your impact.
Yeah, no, that's so true. And I think remembering that, I think, you know, I talked to a lot of parents, and that's hard for them to remember, right? Because in that moment, you know, you have these very real feelings, right? These very visceral feelings in your body. Like, you know, am I ruining my child? Am I setting them up for failure? Am I not supporting them? Am I doing all the things wrong in the world? And, you know, people's, you know, shame from their childhood comes up. And, you know, it's hard to remember for a lot of people that this is a singular moment in time, that this outburst, you know, emotion is a moment in time, right? And it's very real, but just seeing the bigger picture and the journey of it all. You have any words that you have to, any more words you have to help parents kind of see or to breathe and to kind of let go of the control, because the instinct is to control the journey. So, okay, it's a journey, but I have to control it. But they have to go on this path. So, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
It's funny you say control, because I ask, like when I'm doing the coaching, I ask parents this often. I ask them, I say, who do you think has more control? The child, the teenager, or the parent? And most of the time, the parents think that they have control. And the fact of the matter, they don't have the most control. The teenager actually has the most control. And the reason why they have the most control is because the parents care more about the relationship. So a teenager, you know, is so focused on other things. And I say it all the time. If a parent becomes too controlling, the teenager will just completely shut down, distance themselves. Now you don't have a relationship with your child. And I always tell parents, like, you have to play the long game. You know, you know, as a teenager, remember, this child hopefully one day will be 40 with children and a family. Like, try to create the relationship knowing that they're going to be 40 and you want to maintain this relationship. Don't treat them like they're less than and that they can't be open to you. So it's so funny you bring up the idea of control. But yes, you said it, I think, perfectly. I always tell parents, they have to release the pressure, because that is a lot of pressure for the teenagers to fit into the mold of the parent. And today is a different day and age. It's a different world than what the parents experience when they're a teenager. So, you know, allowing them to release the pressure, I think, helps greatly. Because my philosophy is this. It's a very simple philosophy. The relationship is more important than anything. I always tell parents that. More important than their lying, their disrespect, their poor grades, their lack of motivation. Their relationship is most important. So anytime we're talking, and my style of coaching parents is a group format. And I coach person one-on-one so everybody can learn on it. And we ask a bunch of questions and all that. But one of my first questions is always, how is the relationship? So, you know, if you're asking me, hey, my child won't do their chores, I have so many tools to give you, but it's based on where you are in the relationship. You have a great relationship, communication works out really well. But say you have a terrible relationship, well, we have to do other things. One, work on the relationship before you are complaining about chores. So that's really what I try to focus on with the parents, is the relationship is the key.
Oh, I'm such an agreeance with that relationship being the key. And, you know, my belief is that you don't have, even with younger children, I think you made a really good point when you said that teens have more control because they care less about the relationship. You know, and I will say that the two-year-old, you know, you have a two-year-old and a four-year-old, you know, they care very much about your relationship and they just want to please. And so when they're younger, we do kind of have a little bit more control, or at least an illusion of control. But I would say even then that, you know, the only thing that we can really control is ourselves, right? We can't control another person. We can't control that two-year-old or that four-year-old. Now, yes, we have lots of influence. We do lots of things to make sure that, you know, the environment is safe for them, and we can do lots of things. But where we get wrapped up in, whether they're 2 or 12 or 13 or 28, I talk to, you know, parents who are parents, and they're dealing with their parents, or they're still trying to control me. is that the thing is the only person we have control and should have control over is ourselves. And then everything comes out, and then the relationship that we have with ourselves, how we care with ourselves, the messages that we have internally, the peace that we have within ourselves, then we're able to share with the whoever we're caring for, whether it's a 2-year-old or 13-year-old or a 50-year-old, right?
Absolutely. And you know, you said it perfectly. You know, because when they're young at 4 and 2 is not exact control, but we have a huge influence. We all know the older they get, the influence decreases. So, you know, parents out there, you want to try to influence them as much as possible before middle school. Once middle school hits, man, you know, hopefully you've done a great job and you're going to have to really work with them, because it's a completely different shift I see with the middle school age teenage, the children. But I know, I think you make a great point as far as this idea of, you know, controlling yourself, because ultimately I always tell parents, you know, it will take two people to have a relationship, okay? Two people. Now, the good news is it only takes one person to influence the relationship. Mm. Now, yes, if you want to take this relationship to the next level, both people have to contribute. But if you're in a situation where the relationship is not going the way you want it to go, it only takes one person to influence it. And how do you influence that relationship? It's by changing yourself, changing you. And generally that will influence the other person. It's like, oh, wow, I'm not getting yelled at anymore. Oh, wow. You're noticing the things that I'm doing right more than what I'm doing wrong. So tiny little changes like that can, you know, transform a relationship.
Can you talk more about that? Because I know there's a lot of people who may be listening to this right now or in the future or years from now. And they're like, okay, but they're in middle school or they're teens now, and I did the way that my parents did things, and now we have a terrible relationship, just like I have with my parents or whatever the case is, but I don't have a good relationship. It's clear to me now. And now can we go into like some more specifics about like what are some things that, some questions to ask yourselves as a parent, some strategies to try, some ways to regulate, like share, can you go deeper into that?
Absolutely. Yeah, I always tell parents that you really have to focus on the relationship. And that's hard to do because as parents, we want to, you know, like you mentioned, have control over a lot of things. But when you focus on a relationship, you are seeing, like you're spending your energy learning, getting to know this person, out with not holding all of the outside things against them. And it's hard to do that, but that's essentially what happens oftentimes. My child, I'm having to yell at every single day, not me personally, but my child, I'm having to yell at every day to do chores. That will absolutely impact the relationship, because what's going to happen is the anger from that lingers. And as other things happen, now you're less patient. And now you're missing opportunities to like look into this person's almost soul and be like, wow, I really appreciate this part of who they are. Like, it's, you know, it changes the relationship. So I always tell parents, number one, let's focus on the relationship. Now, how do we do that? Well, I always tell parents, you can't give up parenting. So you still have a role to guide your children. So it's not, you know, sometimes I'm a very, you know, relationship driven person. So sometimes parents will come to me and say, so you mean to tell me that I can't punish my children? I'm not saying that at all. What I am saying is you focus more on the relationship. So ways to do that is a simple one, as I just mentioned, pay attention to more of what they're doing right than what they're doing wrong. Like the same energy you bring when they do something wrong, when you're like angry and like, you know, yelling and taking the phone, I want you to bring the same energy when they do something right. You know, like crazy celebration. Like I just had a parent I was coaching, and her child, you know, she just joined my coaching program. Her child was vaping and on marijuana, and he was clean for 10 weeks. And then now he's back to vaping and marijuana. So she came to me and I asked this question. I say, tell me, how much did you celebrate your child in those 10 weeks? Because, you know, the concern that you have now, I wonder if you brought that same energy when he actually put it away and he was clean for 10 weeks. I mean, it should have been a party almost every day for this child, because what we're teaching them is, you know, there is, you know, we all move towards pleasure and pain. So there's a lot of pleasure when you do the right thing. So that's a simple thing. And I'm going to share this last one with you so I don't talk too long. But I always tell parents this, and this is like something I had to learn from actually teenagers. I tell parents, you get one battle to fight at one time. All right, so to choose. You fight one battle at one time. In fact, scientists have discovered that the conscious mind can only handle about four things at once. And what's happening with parents is like, oh, you didn't do your chores, you're fighting with your brother, you're disrespectful, you didn't turn in your homework, you're not been outside exercising enough. And it's just, I mean, the teenagers are just super overloaded with that. So I tell parents, hey, you have to release everything and just choose one battle to fight. And as you're working on this battle, then when it's completely completed, then you can choose another. But you cannot do chores and school at the same time. Pick, you got to choose. And that's really how you grow a relationship and the child, you know, doesn't feel like it's all about what I do.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. Pick one battle at a time. I think that also I would give the same advice for younger children too. If there's, you know, if you are really struggling with, you know, you're having the, you know, quote unquote bedtime battles, and but you also want to take away the pacifier because like, it's that time, you know, one at a time, you know, you don't want to take away the comfort while there you're struggling with another situation where they're likely struggling with comfort. And it, you know, and part of that, I think part of the piling on, I think, at least with teens, a lot of the time, it's like, I think parents are just like they've kind of almost blown up to the point, like, I think a lot of times it's parents blowing up and it's, then it's like, these are all these things that like, and maybe they were trying not to like be overcorrective, and now it's like time and like they're inundating them with thing after thing after thing, and the teen is just shutting down and nothing is really getting solved. And, you know, one thing that I suggest that's around grades, right? When, you know, you get the report card and you see the report card is, instead of at first you see the F or the D or the C or the whatever unacceptable grade it is, and you bring it to your child instead of like, why didn't you get this F? Like, how could you, you didn't study well enough, and start like immediately attacking them, which is what normally happens. Instead, like, you know, instead of trying to make them feel a way about it, why don't we allow them to tell us how they, right? And then have a conversation about like, about, you know, how they felt about it, maybe what they think some possible solutions to the problem may be. But that tends to be not the way that we approach. Do you have a different approach, or have anything to add to anything in terms of grades? Because I know, I hate to bring up grades again, but I know that's a really big part of the emotional turmoil parents and teens experience.
Absolutely. And I want to tell everyone that who's listening that Mr. Chad just gave you guys some gold. I mean, this is absolute gold for a parent, because you're absolutely right, because this is what we teach. So, you know, they come home and you get this grade. And I call this the double pain. I always tell parents, you get to choose one layer of pain. You can't do double pain and triple pain. The child already feels bad. That's pain, okay? So we don't need to add extra pain to that. Now, what we can do as parents, and this is where you came in, what you just said, as far as asking them how they feel about it, is we can heighten the pain. We can exaggerate the pain so that they can do what we want them to do. So in other words, all humans move away from pain and move towards pleasure. All humans. Teenagers are the same way. So parents think, okay, my child is not performing the way I want to, so I can yell at them, I can take away their phone, all these things. But instead, asking questions are the key. I always tell parents that the questions are the gateway to the mind. In other words, your subconscious will answer the question if you ask it. So if you ask me a question, even if I don't want to answer it because my ego, my subconscious is answering already. So by asking them questions, you could direct the questions to either heighten the pain so that the child would say, oh, actually, I do need to study. That actually works much, it's much more effective than saying, why didn't you study? You see, I told you to study. Now you got an F. That doesn't work. But if you say, oh, I'm like, so how do you feel about that? You know, it's like the teen is like, yeah, I don't like this. It's like, oh, you know, it heightens these questions. Well, like literally they're answering the question in their head. So what you just shared with the audience, I mean, this is gold.
Yeah. And I think the difference is like, instead of like the pain is it's coming from them, right? It's I didn't live up to like my standards, or I want to do better. And as opposed to external of like, you know, you need to do better. And then it's like, oh, I need to do better because of this person, this, you know, this parent or this teacher, or do I want to do better for me? Right. And we want them to answer that question. Is that the answer we want is we want them to do better for them. Right. But they never even get to doing better for them because we're so focused on you need to do better because I said so.
I said right?
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. Go ahead. You're going to say something?
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, and that it goes with this idea I always tell parents about the double pain, because ultimately when someone experiences pain, we want them to learn from it. And the parents, you know, when a child does something they're not supposed to do, so we just say something simple. You know, they didn't study. Okay. I hear that all the time. Like my child is not turning in their assignments. You know, so the grade is painful without question. Even if they don't show it, it's still painful. But the problem is whenever you start to layer extra pain, the child, they no longer focus on the subject. They start to focus on you as the giver of pain. Now you're unreasonable. And now, oh, I don't even want to deal with this because of you. As opposed to they only had one layer of pain that they were experiencing, then we could just talk about that topic. But when it's like screaming at me, now I'm, you know, not doing, you know, I'm not good enough already. And now you took away my phone. And it's now all of a sudden, I'm not really worried about the fact that, oh, I didn't turn my homework. Now I'm like, oh, I have an unreasonable parent. Like they just don't get me. I don't even care anymore. So that's why it's so important to not layer all this pain on top of a child, because they will completely miss the message.
I like that. And the last phrase you said of, I don't even care anymore, because, you know, we hear kids say, I don't care. I'm like, I don't even care. I don't even care. And, you know, most of the time they get to that point because of us. Right. And that is that we've stopped them from caring because we've tried to make them because of us, because of our being the giver of pain, we've tried to make them care. And their kind of defense mechanism is that it's like, you know what? I don't even care, right? And that's more problems just keep on tumbling on top of that. And then it's like, how do I get my child to care? And that's not even the question that we should be asking, right? Maybe the question is, how can I reconnect? Right. And how can I help them reconnect with themselves? Let me ask you this, because I want to ask you about family meetings, because I think it's a really great idea and it's something I know that you suggest. How do you go about, what's the reason behind, why should we have a family meeting? How do you set it up and go about it so it's not a, oh my goodness, this again? And how do you make sure that, like, you know, how do you just stay consistent with it and know that it's something that's helpful?
Yeah, no, I'm glad you brought this up, because I actually teach on it a lot with parents, and I'm teaching on it tonight. So it's a great topic. And it's mainly because most families do not have family meetings. And really, it to simplify it, any organization, they all have meetings. There's a reason that anytime you get a group of people together, that there needs to be some kind of structure. There needs to be some conversations that are had. And this is just not happening in a family unit. And that's actually one of the most important units is the unit of the family. So so that's very important to have it. Now, let's discuss, I guess, the structure of a meeting. Because you're right. Because you don't want your teenagers like, oh, here we go again, you know, and not really participating. So there's some guidelines to a meeting. I would say the very first one is that meetings must be positive. So it's even in, I believe, in a normal structure, like a business or something, generally speaking, whenever you're getting the entire group of people together, it should be positive. All the negative, you know, reprimanding and things like that should be actually handled more on an individual level and not necessarily in this group environment. So it's the same thing with the family. There should be no negativity at all. So no, you didn't do this right and that right. So I think that's number one. That's the first rule, is that it must be positive. And number two, it must be structured. It shouldn't be like, you want to talk about something today real quick? You know, it needs to be structured at a set interval. My recommendation is you could do it either once a month, once a quarter, twice a year, or once a year. Now, I think twice a year and once a year is just not enough. I like the idea of a monthly or quarterly meetings when you're setting those up. Now, the cool thing about these meetings is they're not geared around what the children are doing wrong or right for that matter, is actually what we're going to do as a family. So the way it structures that each person has value in this meeting, everyone. Now, naturally, the parents are going to lead it, naturally. But really, we want to discuss what are some things you would like to see or want for this family, for this meeting interval. So say, for instance, we have one in January. Hey, guys, we're going to work on it. Like, what do you want to see for this family? What do you want to do? And we go around, everyone speaks. So me, I'm the dad. Honestly, what I like to see us do is do some more bowling nights. Maybe we could do like 3 bowling nights a month. I mean, that would be so cool. Awesome. So that's my dad. Okay, mom, your turn. Well, I would actually like us to go to do more dinners. And I know we're really busy. You know, it'd be awesome if we could just kind of have family dinner every night. I mean, I know it may be a big ask, but that's something I really want. Awesome. Write it down. And then for the child, I want to take them on more vacations. I think vacations are awesome. We need more vacations. So you're basically getting everyone's want. And as a group, we're going to figure out how to make that happen. And now we are working together. Like we're all on the same team to make this happen. So say, for instance, it's vacation. So we're going to focus on, hey, we want to do the vacation. I like that. Let's go with that. All right. What can we all do to contribute to us taking an extra vacation this year? Okay, from the dad. Hey, you know, I don't want to work extra because I don't want to take away time from you guys. But what I can do is, talk to my financial advisor and see if there's some wiggle room there. Okay, awesome. Mom, what are you going to do? Well, you know, I can actually cook more. You know, I know we've eaten out a lot and I can really save some money by us cooking more. Awesome. You know, child, what are you going to do? Well, you know, I'll research the place. I'll tell you where we're going to go. You know, so that's really how you make these meetings fun. And it's like we're all moving together as a unit and we're having to work together to get this amazing thing that we want.
I really love that. I really love that. It's you're coming together. It's positive. There are things that different people in the family unit want. And then also who's going to contribute and who's going to do what to try to make these things happen. And that really sounds like, you know, you're all giving this feeling of like we're all moving towards, you know, the same goals, right? I have a question. What do you think? Very last question, What do you think about a family culture and values and like intentionally creating family culture or family values and how to go about that? Is that something, how is that talked about? Like, is it talked about?
It's a great question and it's not really talked about at all. Especially when you're getting into values, and values are very important because that's what makes us kind of tick essentially. Now, this is the cool thing about starting the family meetings. Because yes, you want to start them off fun, you know, vacations and all these things. But once you get in a habit or routine, you could create a different kind of focus or a different topic for your family meeting, as long as it's positive. So it's like, hey guys, we went on our extra vacations, awesome. So we're in our next meeting. I thought it would be really cool is for us to really, really get to know each other, like on a deeper level. So I have this value exercise that I want to do with everyone. And, you know, basically is we talk about our values because we all know that words can mean something to us or me that's different than what it means to you. So if I say, one of my values is fun. I really value fun. Okay, well, my definition of fun is different than your definition. Your child may think fun is playing video games for 5 hours. The adult may think fun is when we do, a board game as a family. So you really have to understand someone's definition is not just my value is fun. You know, my value is family. What does that actually mean? You know, because if your value is family, why are you always gone? You know, but really dive into the definitions. So that absolutely can be an opportunity to do as a family meeting. So I would say when you get in the habit of doing this, you can go so deep on the family structure and bring in everyone and everyone feel like they're contributing and that we're a team as we're participating and we're growing together.
That's great. Dr. RJ, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. This was a really great conversation. I really appreciate it. I know a lot of people really out there in the world really appreciate it too. Any last words you want to say or want to plug? You know, tell us about your podcast and the things you got going on. This is your time.
No, thanks for the opportunity. I enjoy chatting with you. I have a podcast. It's called A Teen's Perspective. So I'm just sharing quick. It's a, you know, actually went to more of like the mini series style, where it's like a 15 minute just quick tip that will help you grow as a parent. It's called A Teen's Perspective. And obviously, if you're looking for coaching for yourself or your child, you can reach me at drrjjackson.com/coaching. And then finally, thank you so much for the opportunity. I enjoyed talking with you. And, you know, the last thing I want to leave parents is the relationship is the key. See your 10-year-old, your 12-year-old, as you would want to have a relationship when they're 30 and 40.
What's my name? What's my name? What's my name?